The 2016 referendum, Remainers' complacency, Project Fear, and the Leave campaign's fantasies. Prime Minister David Cameron was a pro-EU politician, a Remainer, as were most of his cabinet members. His decision to promise a referendum on Britain's membership of the EU was meant to halt the rise of populism and bring the right wing of his party back into line. He believed that, although the populists of both right and left were gaining a lot of media attention, there was still a strong majority in the country of those who recognised the benefits to the UK of continued membership of the EU. Based on this belief, he calculated that he could afford to give the Eurosceptics the referendum that they had long demanded in order to reunite his party, fully expecting the electorate to vote to remain in the EU and put an end to the debate. In 2015-16, there was not a great demand among the general public for a referendum on the UK's continued membership of the EU. The decision to hold a referendum was widely seen at the time as a tactic by the pro-EU majority of David Cameron's Conservative government to end the long-running conflict with the Eurosceptic minority within their own party. Centrists in Parliament of all parties were largely supportive of the UK's membership of the EU, as were much of the Liberal media. They assumed that their support was reflected in a solid majority of UK voters. From their point of view, the benefits to the UK of EU membership were self-evident. They believed that voters would recognise that leaving the EU would risk their own economic futures and therefore not vote to leave. This complacent assumption proved to be false, but it had two major impacts on the referendum and the Remain side's campaign. The first impact of the Remain side's complacency was on the design of the referendum itself. The question, as quoted at the beginning of this essay, was a simple binary choice: Remain or Leave. Assuming that Remain would win, the referendum never asked voters to consider precisely what leaving would mean in concrete terms. Following the vote, the best Theresa May's government could come up with was the fatuous slogan, Brexit means Brexit, which clarified nothing at all. This lack of detail on how exactly Brexit was to be executed would become a major problem once the government was faced with implementing the Leave decision. A second fault with the design of the referendum was the threshold for victory. Despite the fact that the referendum was asking voters to consider a major change to the UK's constitutional arrangements, a simple majority would decide the result. Most other democratic countries, such as the US or Japan, make it quite difficult for politicians to change the constitution. There is a good reason for this. Unless changes to the basic legal arrangements of a country have broad public support, those changes are likely to divide society. So, before implementing changes to the basic constitutional arrangements of a country, politicians are generally required to demonstrate that there is sufficiently broad support for those changes. a simple majority, over 50%, of voters alone is not usually enough. In the UK, the referendum only required one side to get over 50% of votes in order to win. There was no requirement for a minimum turnout for the vote, or for the need for a so-called supermajority of voters to support change in order for it to pass. There was a high turnout by historical standards for the referendum. About 72% of the electorate voted, producing a 52% to 48% result in favour of leaving. So, the decision to leave the EU, a decision affecting the very basic legal structures of the UK and its international relations, was decided by just under 37.5% of eligible voters. That is not a demonstration of broad public support for such a fundamental change. The narrowness of the majority is one reason those opposed to leaving have felt justified in attempting to prevent the government from implementing the outcome of the referendum. If David Cameron had seriously considered the possibility of a Leave victory in the referendum, surely he would have made the conditions for implementing Leave more difficult than a simple majority of voters. Surely he would have asked voters to consider the way in which they wish to leave the EU. That he did not do so reflects complacency and a lack of serious deliberation on the part of the pro-Europeans in the Conservative Party. The poor design of the referendum has contributed hugely to the political chaos that has overtaken the UK in the years following the vote. The second impact of the Remainers' complacency was on the manner in which they campaigned in favour of continued EU membership. They made the mistake of being condescending towards the voters, assuming that all intelligent people understood the manifest benefits of the UK's membership. They tended to portray Leave supporters as small-minded nationalists, economically illiterate, or anti-immigrant racists. There is a parallel here with the mistakes made by Hillary Clinton's US presidential campaign in the way that she talked about supporters of the eventual winner, Donald Trump. No voters like being spoken down to, and they tend to punish those they feel are being condescending. Rather than make the positive case for EU membership by clearly explaining how ordinary UK citizens benefited from being part of the EU and directly answering voters' reasonable criticisms, the Remain campaign focused almost entirely on the dire consequences for the UK if it chose to leave. They focused on frightening predictions of economic disruption, lost jobs, and various other problems, from shortages of food to shortages of vital medical supplies. They did not answer questions regarding the transfer of sovereignty away from UK institutions, or what could be done about immigration. As a result, the Leave campaign was able to label the Remain campaign as Project Fear. The Leavers claimed that Remainers had no positive reasons for remaining in the EU, so their only resort was to try and scare voters into choosing to remain by painting an unrealistically dark picture of what the results of Brexit would be. The slogan Project Fear became an extremely effective way of shutting down serious debate of what the consequences of leaving were likely to be. Whenever Remainers started talking about a potentially negative impact of Brexit, Leavers simply dismissed their concerns as being part of Project Fear, and no further debate was necessary. Leavers successfully dismissed fears of the cost of Brexit as Remainers pro-EU propaganda, Project Fear. They were also able to paint the proponents of Project Fear as unpatriotic. Why, the Leavers asked, did Remainers have so little faith in Britain? Did they really believe that the fifth largest economy in the world would be unable to prosper outside the EU? This was a particularly effective line of attack. The Remainers were not arguing that the UK could not prosper outside the EU, but that by leaving, the UK would be taking an unnecessary risk with its economic future. This was a much more nuanced argument than the Leave campaign's relentless optimism concerning the UK's economic future outside the EU. Perhaps one of the lessons of the referendum campaign is that voters are more attracted to optimistic arguments than to pessimistic ones. The Remainers believed that their warnings about the economic costs of Brexit were not unduly pessimistic, but rather responsible predictions based in reality. The unerring optimism of the Leave campaign was, the Remainers believed, based in a fantasy world in which a newly independent UK would be able to transition from EU membership without any disruption to its economy. The Leave campaign claimed that a newly independent UK would be able to negotiate trading agreements around the world that were better than the arrangements it had as part of the EU. The Leavers claimed that negotiating a new trading relationship with the EU, which kept all of the benefits of the existing arrangements, would be the easiest trade deal in human history. They argued that an independent UK would be able to negotiate a deal under which it would keep all the important benefits of EU membership without incurring the costs. All of this has indeed proved to be a fantasy.